The reading this evening is taken from 2 Samuel, chapter 23, and we'll be reading from verses 8 to 19. And if you're following in the Church Bible, that's page 331. 2 Samuel 23, verses 8 to 19. David's mighty warriors. These are the names of David's mighty warriors: Josheb, Bashebeth, the Tarkenite, was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 800 men, whom he killed in one encounter. Next to him was Eleazar, son of Dodai, the Ahohite. As one of the three mighty warriors, he was with David when they taunted the Philistines gathered at Pas Damim for battle. Then the Israelites retreated, but Eleazar stood his ground and struck down the Philistines till his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. The troops returned to Eleazar, but only to strip the dead. Next to him was Shammah, son of Agi the Hararite. Then the Philistines banded together at a place where there was a field full of lentils. Israel's troops fled from them, but Shammah took his stand in the middle of the field. He defended it and struck the Philistines down, and the Lord brought about a great victory. During harvest time, three of the 30 chief warriors came down to David at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. At that time, David was in the stronghold, and the Philistines' garrison was at Bethlehem. David longed for water and said, "Oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." So the three mighty warriors broke through the Philistine lines, drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem, and carried it back to David. But he refused to drink it. Instead, he poured it out before the Lord. "Far be it from me, Lord, to do this," he said. "Is it not the blood of men who went at the risk of their lives?" And David would not drink it. Such were the exploits of the three mighty warriors. Abishai, the brother of Joab, son of Zeruiah, was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 300 men whom he killed, and so he became as famous as the three. Was he not held in greater honor than the three? He became their commander, even though he was not included among them.
Good evening. Julie volunteered to read before she knew what she was getting into. Thank you, Julie. And I'd like you actually to turn to the other same passage, which is in Chronicles, which is on page 414, which is 1 Chronicles, chapter 11, verse 10 onwards. Same story, really, but, minor differences. And let's have a look at a silly picture to start with. Do you know, this bloke is an MBE, known to his friends as Lino. Why did he get his gong? Why did he get his MBE? Does anyone know? Well, it was services to hairdressing, as you do. And I think what was... Can you spot the services to hairdressing? Mr. Cameron gave him... suggested his honour. And the clue is something to do with his parting. He switched it from the left to the right. I'm just looking out there now. I think most blokes have got parting on their left. And I did try this at home just to see whether it would work to put it from the right. And it didn't work. Probably not enough hair. But this guy got an MBE for, as I say, services for hairdressing. And that's what he did to Mr. Cameron. He switched it from one side to the other. I guess he did more than that. Let's turn him off, Pete. Please. So, has anyone ever had a name, your name in a newspaper, for some hopefully heroic deed. I see a nodding there. Hopefully it was a good deed. Says he, okay, we'll find out later. Maybe a long service to a cause that you've been involved in. Anyone to the palace for a gong? Any gongs here? No? Okay. When the honours list comes out each year, it's a long list of names. And most of them don't mean anything to you, I guess. You haven't heard of them. But they made it into the papers, got to the palace, I guess. And for them, probably their parents, their families, it was a proud moment. And in a way, we've got a list here, a little bit like that. And if you look on the Chronicles from verse 26 onwards, which we're not going to read, there's another 20-odd verses of other names and places of people on page 415. And a little bit like the honours list, if you like, they're there, they're mighty warriors, they're mentioned in the Bible. And I guess many of us will read a passage like this and think, well, I'm not sure the relevance of this. Where are we going to take this? A list of obscure names and places. And it's very easy to skim through a passage like this thinking, well, this is obviously there just for historical reasons. Not a lot here for me. But it is there for a reason. And it's within the overall gripping story of David, King David. Now, we all know about him, his exploits, his failures, his achievements. He's in the family tree of Jesus. He's right up there as a Bible great. But also here alongside this Bible great, we get this list of largely obscure, unknown fellas described as mighty men. And I'm probably get told off for this, for doing this, but I'm giving away where we're going with this message at the start. So as we go along, think of how we might be mighty men, mighty people, as we follow Jesus. Some context. When David was anointed as king of Israel by the prophet Samuel, he was just a lad of about 10 or 11. And we all know he served in the court of King Saul. He was a harpist, became a warrior. He fought some great battles on behalf of Saul. But then Saul turned against him because he was almost too popular, too good, a bit embarrassing. He got too much praise for winning the battles. And therefore, Paul wanted this man out of the way, really, and started throwing spears and the like at David. Which I suppose is when David realised that Saul didn't like him very much. Then for the next 20 years, and knowing he had been appointed as king of Israel, David went on the run from King Saul, who wanted him dead. So as an aside, imagine that having been anointed king, but having to wait years and years before finally getting crowned, as it were. Are you waiting for something to happen? A year's a long time, isn't it? It can be a long, long time. And in the meantime, we're thinking, where is God? What's going on? But David, the king chosen by God, had to wait 20 years. But during this time, David gathered together a bunch of followers. And they were basically a bunch of pretty disenchanted men, described in 1 Samuel 22 as, quote, all those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their leader. So these men started out as a ragbag bunch of activists, really, all with issues or grievances. But in their following of David, they found something really attractive, exciting, purposeful in their lives. And with his leadership, they turned into a mighty force, someone to be reckoned with, described in the Bible as mighty men. Ladies, stay with us. I know it keeps talking about men. These men noticed how principled their leader was, how David was. He could have killed Saul a couple of times, who came close by when Saul was hunting him, but he didn't. It would have been wrong to kill the king that God had put in place for that time, so David spared him. And David's men saw how right and just he was, David was. They observed his life. They served him in battle, became incredibly loyal to him. They would have done anything for him, as we'll see in a minute. They loved him as their leader. and then as their king. So three fairly brief points tonight. Firstly, who were these mighty men and what did they do to deserve this description? Well, they were obviously good warriors, and we read how individuals took on and killed hundreds of people, hundreds of enemies on their own. And if you look at verse 12, chapter 11, verse 12, it talks about Eliezer, son of Dodi, the Ahuhite, one of the three mighty warriors. He was with David at Pasdemin when the Philistines gathered there for battle. At a place where there was a field full of barley, the troops fled. In other words, the rest of the army bolted, leaving David and Eliezer on their own. Verse 14, they took their stand in the middle of the field. They defended it, struck the Philistines down, and the Lord brought about the victory. Then verse 15 onwards, it goes on about this drink, which three guys went some way to get a drink just for David. We're going to come back to that in a minute. So strong, brave men. Who were they? And the other 30 listed on from verse 26. Nearly all of them just get one mention in the Bible, apart from the duplication in Samuel. Their names are as remote as where they came from, mostly. So why do we get a list in the Bible of fairly unremarkable men? Why do these no-hopers get a mention in Holy Scriptures? What did they do which was so good? Well, see verse 10. They gave David's kingship strong support. They were right behind David at all times. They stood there for him and with him. They risked their lives. They were totally loyal to him. And their exploits showed total dedication in the face of hardships and danger. They showed courage, faith, took the lead from him, and followed him into battle. And winding back a little bit, when David wasn't king, those 20 years, they were still there. It would have been tough to be a follower of David. It was asking for trouble. They were in the firing line, but they were there, signed up and loyal. And so the key to their success, Pete says it a couple of times in Samuel, actually, the Lord brought about a great victory. So it wasn't David. It wasn't particularly the mighty man. It was the Lord. The Lord brought about great victory. So whilst they did their great mightiness for their leader David, they also did it for David's God, who was their God as well. They shared his love and esteem for God, thus were mentioned in dispatches in the Bible here. They knew their leader, they were faithful to him during good times and bad times. They shared his God. Then let's have a look at their devotion. Thanks, Pete. Have a look at verse 15. Just going to read that again. Verse 15 on page 414. Three of the 30 chiefs came down to David to the rock at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley. At that time, David was in the stronghold, and the Philistines' garrison was at Bethlehem. So the enemies were there in Bethlehem. David longed for some water and said, "Oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." So the three broke through the Philistine lines, drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem, carried it back to David. But he refused to drink it. Instead, he poured it out to the Lord. "God forbid I should do this," he said. "Should I drink the blood of these men who went at the risk of their lives?" Because they risked their lives to bring it back, David would not drink it. Such were the exploits of the three mighty warriors. Strange story. David came from Bethlehem, and he would have known about that lovely spring of water just outside. And whether he said it to himself wistfully or out loud, we don't know. "Oh, just could do with a lovely drink of cool water from that well or that spring," that he would be aware of. I don't know whether he just said it to himself wistfully or whether the men were supposed to hear it or not. But they heard it and they went. They went off to get a drink for their master. So you note their love for their master. This was going to be dangerous. Three men having to sneak through Philistine lines. They could well have been killed. And by the way, this wasn't just a stroll of 100 yards. From what I can read, what I can find out, this could have well been some miles. And there they were, trying to get this water. Picture in mind three chaps having got this water, sort of getting it back, slopping it along the way. But they did. They got the water back for David. Their buckets of water for a lovely drink. And then, verse 18. What? But he refused to drink it. But he poured it out on the ground. What's going on here? Well, verse 19 sort of talks that it was as though this was the very blood of these three men. They could well have been killed for doing this for David. He wasn't worthy just to drink this up to satisfy one of his cravings and selfishly sort of guzzle up this lovely drink. They could have risked their lives for him, so he poured it out on the ground. He poured it out as an offering to one who was worthy to David's God. And the men saw this, they saw his devotion to them, and they would have been humbled as they witnessed his love for them. They didn't, I'm assuming, they didn't think, what's he done? Well, they might have said it originally. We've just been 2 miles and back. Look at him. But I think they would have got it that actually they saw him worshipping God. They realised what he was doing. And so their devotion was total. And they also saw his devotion to them. That was as total, wasn't it? He loved those blokes. And so he couldn't drink it. So what does the mighty stand for? Yeah, strong warrior. But most of all, subservient to their leader. Hanging on his every word. Really loyal. Obedient, dedicated, faithful, willing to die for him if necessary. And then the last point, Pete. Thank you. So where do we fit into this story? How's our devotion? As we've noted, the odds really were against these men, but they held their ground in battle and God gave them the victory. They saw in their leader, David, a man of great courage and integrity. They could have given up. Life would have been easier without him, without going his way. They could have gone and done their own thing, but they chose to stay with him. So David was a great king, a man after God's heart, but at the same time, he was seriously flawed. He was an adulterer, a murderer, a sinner. But he was also a shadow, a signpost to Jesus. Like David, Jesus had no fixed abode at that time. Jesus had enemies who wanted him dead. His justice and his righteousness and the beauty of Jesus was discarded. But unlike the David story, it was Jesus who went through the enemy lines. It was he who had his blood spilt on the ground because of his total devotion to us. So how is our devotion to Jesus tonight? Are we willing to go to any lengths for him, whatever the opposition? For followers of Jesus today, there will be periods of hardship. I say will, I imagine it's a will, not a maybe. It'll come, won't it? Times when life is not going particularly well, that long wait you may be in the middle of. There will be all sorts of enemies out there trying to take us out. Love to see us fail. And our mightiness will be different from the men we've talked about tonight. It might just come from being really patient in times of trial. Or might be really being really patient with others. It might be our kindnesses, our grace shown. Our mightiness might just be how we reflect Jesus in our lives, honouring to God in how we deal with situations. It won't be easy, but will we stay the course like Eliezer and stayed the ground and God gave the victory? Well, as Christians, we've all started out like this dodgy bunch of mighty men. I say they all had dodgy backgrounds. They all had grievances. It says they all had debt or troubles. They were a troubled bunch, weren't they? And we're a bit like that. We start off like that. We've all come from different backgrounds. We've all got problems. But again, in our following of Jesus, we too will find something compelling, something attractive, exciting, purposeful, demanding, scary. And with his leadership, we can turn into people, not mighty men, mighty people, whatever the word might be in these days, who God can use. And we'll also get mentioned in dispatches, not as a hairdresser or some other service, but one who has kept the faith, one who has remained loyal. And as we'll sing in a minute, in thy name we go. Jesus said a while ago, John 7, if anyone is thirsty, let them come to me and drink. This is the sort of opposite of what was happening in the David story. He is the thirst quencher. And just as David loved his men and showed great devotion to them, so much more Jesus loves his people and shows his devotion to us. He was the one who went through the enemy lines, gave up his life, so we would be the water drinkers. And as those early men get a mention alongside King David, we as Christians, like David, also get a mention. We get included in the family tree with our names recorded in a book, the Book of Life. And, Revelation, there's a number of references to this Book of Life in the Old Testament as well, in Daniel. Talks about it right back in Exodus as well. The Book of Life. I'm just going to read a little bit out of Revelation as we close. Revelation, this is on page 1250 if you want to follow it. Revelation 21 from verse 22. I did not see a temple in the city because the Lord Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city doesn't need the sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. On no day will its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Nothing impure will ever enter it, nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful. But here we go. Only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I imagine if you're here tonight, most of your names, most of our names, I trust, I pray, are written in that Book of Life. And this is the gospel. This is the good news of Jesus, isn't it? We won't get on the Queen's Honours List, I doubt. But to have our names written in this Book of Life, it doesn't get better than that. David's mighty men, they were ordinary, non-exceptional people, but faithful and devoted to their master. We also, as ordinary, non-exceptional people, are also hopefully faithful and devoted to our master, which then takes us into the Book of Life. Here's a question to close. As the mighty men would have done anything for their King David, would you or I, do anything for Jesus, given that he has done everything for us?